Welcome to the Tech Flash. If you're looking to increase your ed tech knowledge that's quick and easy to listen to, you have come to the right place. Let's join our host, Josh, and see what today's episode is all about.
Hello and welcome to the Tech Flash. Listen, I am glad you're here. I'm glad you decided to, I guess, walk your dog, mow the yard, put those headphones in, driving in your car. As always, glad you're here. And for our newbies, if you've never listened to the show before, you're in for a real treat. We got a big time guest. Now, Beth, I know, like, if you've listened to the show, I say that for everybody, but I really feel like we got a big time math person in the building. I'm super excited you're here.
Thank you.
Now listen, you know, before the Tech Flash, listen, I got notes today. I got all the things. So listen, before we get started, remember, let's be real today. Teachers definitely don't need more ideas. Mm-hmm. We need things that actually work in our classrooms. Mm-hmm. So for the next 15, 20 minutes, hopefully we're going to build something that they can use today, tomorrow, and really just change the way that they're teaching. So we've got big time, remember I told you, big time guest in the house. We got Beth Fugate, math coordinator here in Broward County Schools. I'm super glad you're here, Beth. Are you excited to be here?
I love being here. I love talking about mathematics.
Oh, I know. Listen, I feel like every time I've been in a training with you and you can just see, like, it's just not one more thing.
Sure.
This is really what you're a part of. This is who you are to a point in our school district.
Thank you. It is my passion.
Now listen, for Beth, you know, just to give you some highlights of Beth, Beth supports math instruction, teacher growth, student learning across every school in the district. She has probably walked into more math classrooms than most people in Tennessee, maybe.
Sure.
I feel like you're always in the schools. You're always doing something. You're not just in your office.
Yes.
Because you want to be a part of teachers' lives. You want to help them grow. You want to help students grow. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Now, you know, I told you before the show, I did some really good research.
Yeah.
And so one thing that I found, and I don't remember necessarily if I've heard you say this, but then we've talked, but you've got this kind of like philosophy or kind of quote, and I'm going to read it just to make sure I don't mess it up.
Okay.
But it says, let students notice, wonder, and predict mathematics before you tell them how to do mathematics.
Mm.
And I think that's just so powerful. When thinking about that quote, Beth, I feel like that line really flips everything about how most classrooms start. And most lessons maybe begin with the teacher showing students how to do something, and then the student practices it.
Sure.
So when we think about that part of it, the teacher's doing it and then expecting the students to do that, how does that, I don't want to say wrong, but how does that really impact the math classroom?
Sure, sure. Yes, thank you for that. I've been on a 20-plus year journey in learning mathematics and studying how students learn mathematics. And it truly has been the greatest joy of my life. And so the thing about our students is that they know some stuff. And if we position them in the classroom as mathematical thinkers and doers, they will become that. And so rather than telling a student exactly how to do every single step to a math problem, ask them some questions. There's one of the most famous quotes that you'll hear me say often is, the best teachers point you where to look. They just don't tell you what to see. So ask your students about the patterns that's involved in that mathematical problem or in that concept, and get them to notice and wonder and spark their curiosity about mathematics. And you will be shocked at what they come up with and the things that they know about mathematics.
Now, you talk about curiosity. But how does that really look in a classroom? Because I think about like my time at Kelly Middle teaching eighth grade math with Kim Bagley, who is, I feel like, just awesome. But, you know, we would work through like two-step equations or some of those higher, just here's your problem. And to me, not being a math-minded person is here, just solve it. Here, we've got an answer, we move on. Mm-hmm. But how do you really in the classroom connect that curiosity for them to want to continue to grow in that?
Yeah. So the thing about when we, especially something like for two-step equations, you know, it's like, okay, well, that process will work for that particular problem. You put a new problem on the board and suddenly those rules expired very quickly. And so we've got to teach students how to be mathematical thinkers, how to look at the problem and determine what's happening or what patterns you might have used in order to solve some of those equations. And then, so let's try that out. So you think that maybe we need to add or subtract first, and then notice that we multiplied and divided at the end. Let's see if that same process will work again. And so you begin to teach students that mathematics can sometimes be a little bit more of like a trial and error type thing. You want students creatively thinking about the problem, being curious about how to solve the problem, because mathematics is the language of science, and science is the reasoning of mathematics. So we have these real world problems that we have to solve anyway. And so we use mathematics to model those problems and then seek a solution. So
when you talk about like real life things, is it better to kind of walk through students through that more of a real life and bringing that into the classroom versus just here's our equation, here's our problem? Yeah. How does that, again, like we're sparking that curiosity.
Sure.
So how does that work?
Yeah. So certainly in recent years, there's been a tremendous transition in mathematics education to starting with a contextual problem or a task. You might hear the buzzword task-based instruction, but basically it just means to present students with an actual real-world problem. And that alone sparks their curiosity. Students don't want to solve the problems that you have because they have enough problems of their own to solve. And they don't necessarily want to answer your questions because they have enough questions of their own about the world. And so when we position them, again, as mathematical thinkers and doers, and present mathematics in context to them, instead of just in isolation or like in abstract form, like just strictly the equation, students know some things, and they know some things about how the world works. And that helps them do the mathematics associated with that.
You know, I think about math for me when I was in school, like, sure. When am I ever really going to use this? And to be able to tie that real life part of it. Yeah. And speaking of real life, let's talk about a classroom.
Okay.
Has there been a time like you've walked into a classroom? And I know you model, you co-teach, you're doing all these amazing things with teachers. But do you have a certain time, like a certain story? Do you have a certain event that you've kind of have seen great teaching, or you've seen some things where you've had to coach somebody up a little bit to get the teacher on board with this idea of like helping the students see that real life connection?
Yeah. You know, we have just been on the most incredible journey here in Bradley County Schools. I have been serving in this position for the past 9 years. And so it has truly been my greatest joy and honor to get to walk alongside our teachers. And that's why you said you never see me anymore, because I'm always out in our buildings. I love working with our teachers and being in the classroom. And so that journey began several years ago with Dr. Susan Loveless. She was a consultant that we hired in. My background is actually in secondary mathematics education. And so I had a lot to learn in elementary. So Dr. Loveless is very deeply embedded in that. So she came and supported us. And the first moment that comes to my mind is when she started demonstrating this style of instruction in our classrooms. And I actually have a picture captured of these students leaped off their seat, like to study the problem, and just how engaged they were, interested, curious about the problem, and really seeking the solution collaboratively. And Josh, when I tell you, it was catching. All of us educators that were in the room, we walked out of that room like, we want that for every child in Bradley County Schools. And so it really just catalyzed us on a journey to embracing task-based instruction in CTM's effective mathematics teaching practices. They've been out for well over a decade now. And so it really just gave us that tangible moment of, our kids can do this.
Yeah. And you use that word task-based instruction. So I guess instead of like, here's your problem and we're going to solve it, now we're really going back to here's a real world issue, a real world thing that you may do, you know, after you graduate high school and, you know, you're with your family, you're doing these things and being able to apply that to them. So with that kind of task, like, how does a teacher come up with that? Does a teacher, like, you know, now in the age of AI, are they going to like their ChatGPT and like, listen, here's my standard, make a real life problem that I can teach my students? Or how does that task really work?
Yeah. Well, luckily, we're so blessed that to have curriculum that really responded well to the state standards and to NCTM's effective mathematics teaching practices. I actually served on the state committee that we vetted all of the curriculum. And so all of them responded so well. And so the curriculum that we have in the state of Tennessee really is already task-based instruction. So there are rich problems embedded in that curriculum that teachers can use. So it takes a lot of that lift off of the teacher of having to seek and find or even tweak that it's already printed and done for them. And it's in the student book. And then a couple of years ago, I actually had some Bradley County teachers work on what we called curriculum guides. And so they went through each and every lesson, every page of every lesson, to find the richest, most critical task for students that was best aligned to the standards. So internally, we have written the task and the success criteria that goes with that. So we've done a lot of that lift for the teacher.
That's really awesome that we had teachers from our own district to go write those and create those and go through them. And so I guess from there, then teachers can look up, you said the NCTM.
Yep. National Council of Teachers of Mathematics.
Yes. And I think I remember that when I was in college, I had a teaching of elementary mathematics class. Mm-hmm. And I do remember that acronym coming up and going through that. And we did, you know, even think about it now, we did some more task-based things.
Good. Yeah.
Even though math is not my strong suit. Shout out again to Kim Bagley, who helped me out a ton, but just going through that. Then I think like teachers are, taking these tasks or taking this and presenting it to students. But how does that teacher really drive that home to get them excited?
Yeah. So the preparation from the teacher perspective really has changed as well over the course of the years. Again, if you're like me, we're studying and doing all the problems and thinking about the number of problems to assign to students to practice. And while certainly that still has merit, but now the teacher really is thinking from a task-based perspective, what questions can I ask the students to help them understand the problem and arrive at a solution? So one of the myths kind of behind task-based instruction is that we just hand the students off and hope for the best and let them explore together. And that's not really what happens. The teacher is very heavily involved with explicit connections and questions for the student. Again, the best teachers point you where to look. They just don't tell you what to see. So the teacher now really has to plan the questions and think about how will students think about the problem? So we spend a lot of time anticipating solution paths. Like, what do we think students will do when presented with this problem? What will they try to do? What will work for them? What misconceptions might they have? And then I work with teachers to design assessing and advancing questions for each one of those solution paths. So that way, at the end of that task, all the students see the learning target, because we've asked the right questions.
Yeah. I think questioning is so key. Mm-hmm. And I can remember going back again, Coe Middle, right?
Yes.
I was there for a long time.
No.
And we partnered with Jill Jackson.
Yes.
I remember if
awesome.
You remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the most biggest struggles of my life, because I can remember she would come in, and I don't remember her name, but she had an associate that would come in and it would travel in to help teach. And I was with Holly Dare.
Okay.
And so this lady would come in, and of course, you were probably in the room, and everybody's sitting in the back room, all these people from the district. And I can remember my wife being in there. So there puts more pressure on my teaching. But I can remember asking questions in that math room.
Yeah.
And she would come up to me and say, listen, let's try it again.
Okay.
But let's say it this way.
Okay. Sure.
And sometimes she would say things, and I'm like, but it's essentially the same thing I just said.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm presenting it in a different way.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, all right, let's go with what you have to say.
Yeah.
And through that process, you could see the students understand it more. Mm-hmm. And even when she would leave and I had to do it on my own, because then she'd come back in a couple weeks.
Sure.
And I'd have to show her that, hey, I'm working on this. Mm-hmm. And I could see like the growth that we had. I feel like me and Holly had some great growth that year of our students, not just because of our questions, but the way they collaborated. They did so many great things.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the questions that we kind of not giving them the answers, but leading them.
Sure.
That. It's just really important for that.
Yeah, really, Josh, that's making me think of what we do now, basically a lesson study. So that's a style of professional learning where the math coordinators come in and we plan a lesson with a grade level team and we go in depth with it. We anticipate those solution pathways, like I was saying, we design those assessing and advancing questions, and we talk about the time. Like, we're not just going to leave students in the exploration phase for 30 minutes. That's a very strict amount of time. In fact, it's usually on average 8 minutes or so, depending on the grade level. And so then once we get that planned up, then we talk about, okay, what now? We got some work from students. So let's talk about sequencing and selecting those student solution paths to tie it all together. Because even if the students didn't get the picture during the exploration time, they have to before the end of the class. Yeah. So we want to design that coherent storyline there at the end. So anyway, we plan that lesson together as a grade level team. So all of your favorite friends are in the room with you planning the lesson. And then the next day or so, one of the teachers in that grade level will teach that lesson. And we study the lesson well, and we watch the lesson being enacted as we designed it. It's less about the teacher and more about the actual lesson plan that we all contributed to. And so then we'll have those conversations in the debrief, like what worked, what didn't work, should we make a modification here? And lo and behold, every time I've ever done a lesson study, which is in the hundreds by now, a child does something that none of us expected. Yeah. Again, we got to trust the children. They know some stuff. And so anyway, we make those modifications and then the next teacher will teach that same lesson and we'll all watch that and then debrief. And really over the course of the past 7 or 8 years that we've been doing this, we've gotten so many high quality lessons. So again, that takes a bit of the burden off the teacher. Those are linked in the curriculum maps and they can access those. And so, yeah, it has that coaching model that you reference embedded into it.
I think about like the lessons and it sounds, but it probably is. And I don't mean to sound like negative, but feels almost very scripted, right? And I think like based off your lesson study, you want to see what works, what doesn't. You're advancing questions. You want to make sure those are very thoughtful, purposeful. Sure. So maybe you know those ahead of time. Yeah. So instead of walking into a classroom and say, hey, we're going to do this today, you already know your questions. You already know the advancing questions. And I think that probably does help them kind of guide them to the direction you need. And then even, you know, we think about like the foundational skills that they have. And you may get into a classroom and they should have these foundational skills, but maybe they don't. Yeah. So through a task, I'm going to try to figure out my answer, my solution to this real world task. And the teacher's, again, asking these advancing questions. But there's probably a little bit also in there of coaching. You know, you may have learned how to solve two-step equations.
Sure.
And this is a two-step equation problem to solve the real world task. But now you're going back through and kind of walking them through how to do that again, right?
Absolutely. I tell teachers all the time, especially when we do those lesson studies or when the lesson plan is linked on the map, it is not about you memorizing the questions to ask, but it is about the intellectual preparation that it takes to facilitate this style of learning. And again, our kids know some stuff.
Yeah.
So we want to figure out what questions can we, the teacher, ask to get that information out of the kids' heads and help them formulate some of their thoughts, while that also gives us a glimpse into things that they might not know yet. And so it's just an amazing style that gives you really a one-on-one perspective with each student, because in this particular lesson structure, you're going around and asking these assessing and advancing questions to every group of students. They usually work together in groups of two or three. And so you're having a one-on-one conversation nearly with every child in the classroom.
Our classroom is changing, right? And I think like technology's out there, that's changing some things. But to have those, not just one-on-one because students are working individually, but to be in groups. Because, you know, as teachers, we do that. Your lesson studies, this is not you one-on-one with the teacher designing a lesson. You're taking expertise from all the teachers to create that. And now when you're in the math classroom and you're completing these tasks, the students are working together to come up with that. Because one student may know the answer, know the path to get there.
Yep.
And the other one struggling.
Sure. Yeah.
And now they're listening to their peer and mm-hmm. they're getting that peer feedback.
That's right.
And they're growing together. Mm-hmm. I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good way of looking at it. And
absolutely.
I think I don't think about that sometimes in the mm-hmm. classroom
yeah.
for math tasks. Hey,
yeah.
here's your math task. Work individually. I want to see what you know.
Yeah.
But to a point, even when you get in the real world, yes, you're going to know something's an individual,
yeah.
but you're always going to have a supervisor. You're going to have a coworker. You're going to have mm-hmm. someone to run your ideas through.
Absolutely.
And so you're not just working on math tasks. You're working on real life.
And just solving problems. That's what we want to create in Bradley County Schools is students, again, who see themselves as mathematical thinkers and doers. And if they believe that about themselves, yeah. they are that themselves. So it gives them the opportunity to work together. And teachers say often, well, another student can just explain it to them better than yeah. I can. It's like, well, great. Let's position the opportunity yeah. for that to happen.
Yeah. Opportunities are so mm-hmm. important.
Yeah.
Now, listen, we've talked about a bunch today, Beth. And listen, we're going to come back for part two.
Okay.
So I know you guys listening out there, you're diving in. Where is this conversation going? Because we're talking about teachers. We're talking about how we can incorporate mm-hmm. our task and mm-hmm. our advancing questions
sure.
and really driving things for the students to start thinking. Mm-hmm. But for part two, mm-hmm. we're gonna flip it on the other side. We're going to start talking about students.
I love it.
And what that looks like. Because
yeah.
I think it's just not one-sided.
Okay.
It's just like when you talked about your lesson studies and you're observing and the students would say things or react to questions mm-hmm. a certain way and you didn't expect that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think
mm-hmm.
we have to prepare for those things.
That's right.
And we have to talk through that. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, before we wrap up, okay. Beth. So if you've got a math teacher out there listening or just a teacher in general that's listening, what's one thing they can take from our conversation today and really apply that to their classroom?
Yeah, I would say trust your students and think about the questions you want to ask to get them to where you need them to be.
Knowing our students is key. You're from them day one to the end of the year, mm-hmm. you're with your students, you're understanding them, you know where their struggles are. So if we can understand them,
yep.
that really drives our advancing questions, that drives our instruction.
Yep.
Because if we're not listening to that, then we're just teaching them content and yep. they're not going to grab onto it.
That's right.
That's a great tip.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And we'll be back for part two in just a second.
Two.
So there you go. So really just remember, know your students, know those advancing questions and really drive home some things to help them understand the real world hackability of it to do those things. And I think you're going to really see some growth in that. So there's one idea, something for you to try tomorrow. So we'll catch you for part two coming up. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for joining us today on the Tech Flush podcast. Stay tech savvy. Keep those gadgets charged. And remember, teachers and technology go hand in hand, connecting students to a world of knowledge for an electrifying learning experience. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and spread the word about the Tech Flush to your friends. Catch all episodes on Apple Podcasts. See you next time on the Tech Flush.